Yeah, no, I feel like the fury of every angry person could bore a hole through the center of the earth, and I'm willing to channel it.
That's the plot of Ghostbusters 2, actually, so...
My funny bit every day of my life is waking up, because it's a joke on me.
There's the intro, everybody. Welcome to the Dirty 30. Let's go!
You can't see it, but I'm fucking dabbing. Our podcast is the spice of life. Welcome. You're listening to Out of Dodge, a podcast hosted by two wonderful, beautiful people. One of which is me, Trevor. And the other?
It's Shane. It's me. Hi, yeah. What's up?
What do we do in this podcast, Shane?
Usually we like to talk about movies, TV shows, video games sometimes. We also watch a lot of bad TV and then talk about news.
Yeah, news you already know. Anyways, guess what came out recently? Dune. And, boy, what a mess.
Hey, everybody. So we're going to talk about Dune and then we're going to talk about some other stuff. But more importantly, we're going to talk about Dune. It's here. It happened.
Oh my god.
It wormed its way into our hearts and caused cardiac arrest.
It's coarse and rough and it gets everywhere. Jesus, man. So this was like heavily delayed, right?
Not delayed enough, if you ask me.
I mean, I'm going to see Dune 2. We're getting off topic. So, okay. Dune came out on HBO and in theaters. It is about a... I don't know, what, a little prince boy whose family gets sent to a desert planet to mine this...
Spice,
which is this drug that people use...
To space travel.
Space travel, but it also makes you see visions about making out with ladies, I guess.
Yep, it's true, it does. That's the
it's plot. Really, really ill-defined. It's such a weird movie.
But before we get into the bit, I think Dune is the prettiest unnecessary prequel novel that I've ever seen.
Yes.
Because honestly, and I say this fully, I think this whole movie could have been 20 minutes of a better movie.
Yes.
Because all the stuff that happens is kind of vague and boring, and most of the time is spent doing nothing.
You're not incorrect. In fact, I would argue that you are correct. Dune is, to me, a really good, or not a really good, it would be a poorly paced season one of a show.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there's so much garbage that they just, like, introduce and show, but they don't explain or give breath to, you know?
Yeah.
So everything's just like, there's some things that meander and overstay their welcome, but there's some things that are just like, bah, 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 bah. And then it's like, why? Why are you hitting me with 1,000 things all at once about these, like, chanting men who are, like, drinking blood or whatever? Why are we going to explain that? No? Okay. Cool.
If you haven't seen the movie, guys, this won't make any sense. But also, this won't make any sense if you have seen the movie, because it's bad. Where to begin? I have so many bits.
Should we talk about the cast first and then jump into things?
Oh, yeah, sure. Cast is great. I always say that about everything we ever watch, but it is really good. They collected a lot of good people. They don't use any of them well, but...
Yes. So we have your Timothée Chalamet.
As Paul.
Paul. God. We're going to talk about Paul in a second. You know the blender from like two episodes ago?
Uh-huh.
Paul was my blender. We're going to talk.
Is it because they don't use him and he doesn't take anybody's hands?
Yes. So we got your Zendaya, who's also the blender, too, because...
Yeah, she's kind of a dream vision 80% of the movie, and then the one chance Paul, the main character, has to say anything of meaning, he actually goes, oh, wait, never mind.
You have your Oscar Isaac. You have your Jason Momoa.
Hell yeah, baby.
Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
Dave Bautista, who actually does a decent job.
Yeah, scary monster guy, yeah.
You have a Skarsgård in there. You have Josh Brolin, alive or dead, who knows?
In the movie, not really.
Yes. And then Rebecca Ferguson, who plays Lady Atreides? Atreides.
Jessica?
Lady Jessica Atreides. No, I'm having a bad time over here.
It'll be a fun edit, babies.
Leave it in. So Paul.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet.
Correct.
Main character.
Uh-huh.
He's a little sad guy.
Yeah.
A little emo kid. Uh-huh. And he kind of gets life forced upon him in a very drastic way.
Don't we all? But okay.
I mean, yeah, by at birth. But like... So he's this... a duke's son, and they're living on like Scotland, and then they're like, I guess we have to go, the emperor tasks us to take in this desert planet and mine in the spice, so we gotta do it. And then they have like literally one day there, and it's the worst day in the world, because he almost gets killed by a drone, and then at night, they get attacked by big, bald baby men.
There's a space war, but it's also not cool, like a space war would be.
Yeah, and then all these people charge out of the palace with swords, being like, we're going to take down these spaceships. I'm like, what are you going to do with that? Huh? What are you going to do with that?
Can we talk about the weapons? Can we just do that right now?
We'll do that right now, and then we'll get it over with, and then we'll circle back.
Okay, cool, because fuck off, number one. Yes. That's my big look. Okay, so I understand swords are cool, right? They look cool, and you're in space, and you're trying to do all this cool imagery. Everyone has swords, but they also have shields that can protect you about, I don't know, 60% of the time.
Yeah, so apparently,
kind of iffy, these shields.
As long as the blade moves slow, it can go through the shield, which I'm like, why?
And also, they have little drones that are made to go through the shield, but also, so we're talking about weapons. They mostly kind of old-timey sword-based weapons, even though they have, you know, helicopters and shit. But also, there's a laser that can kill God that the enemy has, and that I think,
oh my god,
I think that should just be every weapon. It's amazing to me that they don't just make guns out of the lasers that can kill God,
right?
Because one, they use one to cut down a door, but also there's one on the big enemy ship that just kills everybody. Not Jason Momoa, because he's cool, but everybody else. Well,
Jason Momoa dies later, but
that's true.
R.I.P. Duncan Idaho. His name's Duncan Idaho. Anyways.
Yeah, let's circle back to the plot as we
so
were
the
talking
plot,
about.
They get to desert planet before big babies come, and everybody's like, wow, Paul, you're Jesus. You're going to save this planet. You're like space Jesus. And he's like, why? And they're like, and so there's this whole thing with his mom, who's like has this power of the voice, which can command people to do things.
It's
so
weird,
it's kind of like the
power
Force.
Barely used, yeah.
Yeah. Big babies attack. Paul and his mom are able to escape. Oscar Isaac unfortunately gets killed, but tries to take out this Baron guy who's leading the attack. But they are betrayed by their doctor.
Randomly.
For seemingly no reason.
Yeah, so if I could talk about this subplot. The Duke, you know, father of Paul, gives probably the best speech in the whole movie. About, like, how leadership is hard and that he loves his son no matter what. And I'm like, that's cool. And also, he's kind of like, I know the Emperor is just sending us to the sand planet so he can find a good way to kill all of us because he doesn't trust us. And we have to rebel and use sand power and all that. And you're like, okay, cool. This guy knows what's up. And then he immediately gets betrayed by a doctor randomly.
Yeah.
And it's like, what was the whole point of making this character seem like a smart, cool, competent person if you were just going to kill him? But also, the poison tooth. Dr. Wellington, who's the big traitor in this, randomly, takes out the Duke, and then it has this whole monologue about, hey, I'm going to put a poison tooth in your mouth, and then when the bad guys capture you, you're going to do a big chomp, and the poison's going to get out, and it's going to kill all the bad guys. And I'm like, that's an insane plot point in this film. Also, it doesn't work.
So, it kills some of the bad guys.
It kills some, yeah, it kills, like, bad guy number six, but not bad guy number one, who's not bad guy number one, because the whole film is about, like, this big Imperium out in superspace, and we're just dealing with, like, the henchmen. This whole movie, we're just dealing with henchmen. A nightmare. Nightmare of a film. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. I really liked Oscar Isaac. We'll circle back, but I really liked Oscar Isaac.
I did, too, but I wanted him to have, I think if we're going to do the poison tooth, it should have been his thing that he was already ready to do.
Yeah.
And that he should have had more agency, because it would have made more sense because of how competent he is at the beginning of the film.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll do this quick because I don't want to do a play-by-play. But Paul and Mom go out into the desert, and then Jason Momoa dies. Paul has these, like, visions of...
space war, sort of?
Of, like, possible futures and stuff like that. And it's like kind of the spice, but it's also maybe he has magic powers. And they get found by the Furman, which are these like nomadic tribes that are native to the planet. And they're like, yeah, we don't like people coming and taking our spice because it's part of our religion. And they have like a little fight. They have a little scuffle because one of them doesn't like Paul.
Yeah, about the scuffle, which I know I wrote down.
The scuffle is the climax of the film.
Yeah, the scuffle is the climax of the film. And I have a lot of problems with it because once the baby men, as we explained, the kind of oil, scary military babies invade the planet and kill most of Paul's family. You would think, oh, they're the bad guys. Paul should probably fight one of them at the end, or somebody,
or like Dave Bautista or something. You know,
anybody at all that has any significance to the plot. But no, the climactic fight is between Paul and some random douchebag, and it's a fight to the death. And Paul kills him. It's supposed to be a big moment because it's like Paul can be a leader because he is cool enough to kill. And I'm like, okay, one, that feels so like weird and outdated. But two, this is just a random fella in the desert. Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Why does it matter? It doesn't matter. It's so lame. It's so stupid.
Yeah, and then the movie ends, and then you see someone riding a worm, and then Paul goes, desert power, and the movie ends.
In the hella distance, by the way, it's not a part of the thing the movie gives you. The thing about this movie is it's all sequel baiting. Half of the fucking trailer is just dog shit visions of possible futures for other movies.
Yes.
Which is not, in my opinion, great. This movie is so devoid of like quality or content because it's all like, maybe Dune 2 will be good. Maybe.
I was nervous when, because I was like, I know they're going to do this Dune 2, but I hope that Dune 1 at least can stand on its own as a decent film. And then on the title of Dune, which is not on any of the posters, mind you. It's not on any of like the trailers. On the title of the film, when it appears, it goes Dune Part 1. And I'm like, fuck off. I'm like, no. Nuh-uh. Like, you have to earn a Part 2. You can't just be like, I want it.
Yeah, if I had seen this in the theater, I would have been incredibly pissed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of it was because I didn't also watch it in theaters, you know?
Literally none of it. I don't think the experience would have been changed. I don't think it would have been better had you seen it on a big screen. It just would have wasted your time in a different location.
All right, okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. I love going to the movie theaters. I've talked about it on this podcast before, but I don't... If that's, like, the thing that really makes it good or bad, then you fucked up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. Can we talk about Paul?
Yes. Let's talk about Paul. He does so much. Does he? No.
I'm going to talk about one thing in particular about Paul, and then we'll go into his, like, personality.
Great.
I hate that his name is Paul. Because, okay, hear me out, okay? The year is, like 11,000 whatever, right? And people are... Like, human beings are spacefaring. Some have magic powers of the voice where they command people.
I mean, only kind of sometimes.
Kind of sometimes. But then, his name's Paul? Like...
Paul? He's just a guy.
This is such a generic name.
Just a regular guy.
Why Paul? Like, no one else has a normal human name.
Well, Jessica is a normal name.
Yeah, but that's dumb, too, you know? Like,
okay, Duncan. Yeah, Duncan Idaho's
like Duncan Idaho.
That's a wild name. That's a space name.
But yeah, Paul, no, get out of here. Get out of town with that Paul nonsense. Are you kidding me? I can't fathom how Paul can be the savior of the universe.
Yeah. See, here's some of my issues about Paul. His dad's great. His mom, in theory, could be like the strongest person in the universe if she used her power at all. We'll talk about that in 1 second.
Yes.
This movie does kind of have that air of like, oh, well, this British royal family decided at the last minute to maybe not be evil and then got snuffed out anyway. Feel bad for them. And I'm like,
Yeah, it's kind of like season 1 of The Crown. The queen is in like Africa doing a tour of the colonies because that's when they had colonies in Africa. And then her dad dies because of like cancer. And she's like, oh, I'm so sad. Oh, but I'm like, the colonies that you're in. You're currently negatively affecting. Like,
it's hard for me to feel bad for you, you fucking destructive force of evil on the entire world.
I'm sorry. I forgot to be sad for an empire. Here's the thing. I'm fine with him being like, you know, realizing, oh, the empire's bad because, like, we negatively affect indigenous people of planets. You know, a come to Jesus moment, whatever.
A come to Paul moment, yeah.
What I don't like is that he is space Jesus. That's the part that I really don't like. Because he hasn't done anything to earn anyone's attention or affection at all.
But yeah, he doesn't in the whole film, except for maybe pilot a helicopter well. And by that, I mean he just lets the universe move the helicopter around.
Yeah, for like 45 minutes, he just goes like, whoa.
But yeah, he doesn't really do much. And I know it's the first film, you know what I mean? But like, actually, no, fuck that. It's like 2.5 hours of my life. He didn't fucking do anything. Except for stand around and have dream visions.
He immediately gets to the planet Arrakis, right? Is that the planet? Mm-hmm. He gets to Arrakis, and all of a sudden, all these people, like the native folk, are like, "You're the one who's gonna save us. We love you. You're the most important person in the galaxy."
Even though and it might I'm be like, your sister, but we'll get probably to that later.
It's probably the sister.
That'd be
probably
fine.
Probably the sister. Probably. But like, he doesn't do anything to warrant them being so enamored with him.
I agree with that, yes.
So why?
I don't know.
Why are they?
I don't know.
What's the point? If he had, like, say someone was, like, you know, a servant or whatever was, like, fell to the ground, and he helped them up, and then people saw that, and they were like, that guy, maybe he's not all bad. Fine. Like, there's not even, like, a pet the dog moment for us to give a shit, you know? I just don't. He does nothing, and he deserves nothing because of that. So right now I'm saying I'm displeased with Paul. What else? There's just a whole lot of
let's talk garble. About the voice. Let's get back to that because okay. I do want to talk about. So Paul and his mother have the voice, basically a ticket to mind control. It's barely used. I think if the mom had a megaphone, she could probably just kill everybody. Is all I'm saying. It's one of those things where you introduce, like, a little thing, and you're like, that'd be cool later. But then it almost breaks the entire story because of the fact of how useful it could be if it was used at all.
Yeah.
Because you have this weird pseudo-religious order in the background, which sometimes works with the evil bad guys, but also is doing its own thing.
From the outset, it looks like Paul is the only guy in, like, kind of space history to have the voice.
Yeah, because it seems like the order, the religious people are like, hey, you said you would have a daughter, you know, a thing you can control. Not really. Yeah. She has Paul, but then at the end of the movie, it's like she's pregnant. So maybe that'll be a bit in Dune 2 or 3 or Dune 9 or whatever.
I can't do a Dune 9. I don't have it in me. So let's talk about Zendaya.
Okay. There's also not much to talk about. No offense, obviously.
No. Exactly. No offense to Zendaya. But she was, like, on every press tour with Timothée Chalamet. Poster. Every poster. You can walk into that film assuming that her and Paul share equal screen time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? No.
No. Like,
he has dreams of Zendaya.
Standing around.
Blue eyes. Sometimes they kiss. Sometimes they just walk through some rocks.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. And he's like, there's something about this girl. And I'm like, okay, Paul. Like, whatever, man.
Cool if we could see her at all, but no, yeah. We don't know. Whatever. They do meet at the very end. He's like, hey. And she's like, what? And then there's a pause. And it's like, oh, he's going to say something important in the film. Start a human connection that's supposed to be really important to the galaxy forever. And he's like, never mind. And I'm like, that's this whole film. It's a big never mind.
I was like, huh? Really, Paul? You're going to wait till the next movie?
Something I want to talk about, because this, in theory, is what our podcast is about, sure. Depending on how long this Dune bit is. So, world building, specifically space world building in this.
Mm-hmm.
We see 3 or 4 planets. You know, we have Arrakis, that's the big deal. And then, you know, we see a military planet. And then we also have, like, a bad guy HQ. I'd love to talk about bad guy HQ for 2 seconds.
Go for it.
Because a bunch of scary worm, a bunch of, like, oily, scary dudes have an angry conversation in a cone of silence after asking their spider dog to leave the room.
Yeah,
that's a whole scene, by the way. So that's fun, isn't it? For a second, you're like, are there aliens in this? Because sometimes people say the word human derivatively, and I'm like, what the fuck are you then? Like, what are you on? Yeah. What are you on about? Because you're somewhere else. You're still a person. Like, get out of here. Anyway, you really get no scope of the threat or the stakes in this film. In terms of the plot, because we're talking about the Imperium, that in theory the House Atreides, you know, where Paul's family belongs, you get no sense of what this empire looks like or why they're evil or what they do. They employ people who are angry and you're like, that's scary, I guess. And you see the military world for which they take soldiers from and you're like, that's scary, I guess. But you never see, like, the big emperor guy, or you never really get a whiff of what that guy looks like. And once the big invasion happens and Paul's dad dies and everything blows up, the bad guys almost vanish from the plot. They come in and they kill Duncan Idaho, big sad moment. But you don't feel the pressure of this invasion or of this Imperium or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
It almost feels invisible. It feels like we're just having a vacation in the sand and that none of this is really happening. It doesn't feel like we're in space at all, almost.
Well, because we're on sand planet.
Speaking of sand planet.
Go nuts.
It's interesting, you know. We have the native inhabitants. We have these giant worms and abandoned facilities. But it's hard to connect to. You know why? Because we spend more time with the trees than we do with the people. The trees that need 5 people's worth of water. Which I think is unacceptable.
The palm trees. That's a whole scene.
That's a whole scene where we talk to a gardener who's like, we gotta protect these trees because they're pretty important to Arrakis. And they burn down about 10 minutes later. And you're like, wow, that was great. Thanks for that scene, guys. I loved it so much. I didn't love it. Also, the worms on the planet. Because the worms are a huge thing. That's what people know about Dune. People who've never read Dune, and before this film even came out, they could tell you there are worms in it. That's the bit.
Yes.
You barely see the worms. There's one really good sequence with this mining car, like this huge mining tank thing that gets stuck in the sand and the worms come and we have to rescue them with helicopters. And it's a really good sequence because it's really tense. And you're like, are they going to get out in time? And then the worm sucks it into the ground. You're like, that was cool. The rest of the film is never nearly that exciting. And also you never see the worms. The worms are just kind of like underground.
We see one worm kind of like pop its head up and it's like, I'm a worm. Then it pulls its head back down.
So it looks at Paul and is then like, I don't want to be in the movie anymore. And then it leaves.
Do they have eyes? I don't think so. They got this big mouth.
Not in like the traditional sense. I'm sure they have some kind of extrasensory perception. I'm wondering, here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you think the voice works on the worms?
I would hope so. If it works on Spider Dog.
Basically what I'm saying about the world building, and I know it's the first movie, but you don't feel like you're in space. And I know there's so many ships. The ships are beautiful. Props to the special effects team. And a lot of the cinematography is good. It's kind of shallow because the movie's bad. But like a lot of the shit looks great. Yes. So hats off. Yes. 100% props where it's due. It's like the dragonfly things. Fucking cool as hell.
Oh, yeah.
I love them. The like cornucopia ships that just like spew enemy fighters forever. That's fun. It's stupid. I love it.
One big tube. Why?
It's so evil, the tube. But overall, there's very little gravity to this film.
Yes. Here's the weird thing.
Okay.
And so, you know how, I hate to do this, but you know how Star Wars, you can like identify people and like factions by their ships and their colors and stuff like that?
Yeah.
You know how Star Trek has, like, very identifiable, like, designs for spaceships and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I can't tell you what any goddamn shit looks like in Dune besides big tube and dragonfly ships.
I don't know why you said I hate to do this when that was a good point.
I don't want to compare. I don't want to be like, I mean, I think they're different. They're going for different things, those movies and properties.
But those movies also do a better job at immersing you in a universe that's incredibly huge and complicated. Yeah. Star Wars does a better job of putting you in a universe and having shit happen right away and you do not get confused. You're like, okay, I'm ready. We don't spend the whole time on Tatooine just fucking around.
Yeah, so would you say Dune is effective or not effective at immersing, well, world building and immersing you in that world?
Okay, so here's my thing. I said that a lot of the stuff looks great, and there are sequences that legitimately work and look pretty and are interesting. But overall, Dune holds so much back for a sequel. They give you so many, like, crumbs of interesting things that I say it's not effective. Because you don't really spend the time, you don't spend quality time on Arrakis, even though you spend literally 2.5 hours on Arrakis.
Yes.
So it doesn't have the depth needed to give you an experience that is immersive or good.
I think that is a very good answer. Also, I hate how Paul watches documentaries in the movie that describe part of the world instead of just showing us the world and its people. I mean, I'll watch Dune 2. I might fuck around and watch Dune 2. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, I'm curious for sure, but I'm very disappointed, and I'm not... It's very deflating as a film to me.
Definitely parts of it that I enjoyed, and I think the director's talented, and I think the cast is talented. Like, no one gave any bad performances.
Yeah, I agree.
The cinematography is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it wasn't there. Like, I guess it's the writing then. That's the one.
The heart and the intention and, like, the, I don't know, the excitement.
But it didn't feel like anyone was, like, it didn't feel like characters were gelling together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's because a lot of the dialogue in Dune, we're still talking about Dune somehow.
Yeah, sorry.
A lot of the dialogue in Dune is just inhuman. So they're kind of going for, like, an air of seriousness and mystery, and I understand that, but it falls flat. Half the lines are secret whispers, and the other half are these long-winded speeches about destiny. It takes people years to convey anything. Rarely can they talk or feel or connect in any way that matters. It's just Shakespeare in the year 5000. It's impossible to connect to.
But Dune 2, though! Just kidding. I won't be an apologist.
Dune 2, guys. It was greenlit, so we're gonna have to deal with it eventually.
Yeah, there might be a third.
Here's my Doom predictions, guys. We're gonna go for gold here in this segment called What Happens in Dune, and we're gonna see how funny and off we are in 30 years
go
when
for
Dune
it.
9 comes out. We're gonna wage space war. Sorry, there's a line in the movie where he complains. Paul has a vision of leading a space war with Zendaya against the evil empire.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't wanna wage a holy war across the galaxy. And I'm like, that sounds fucking cool, dude. All you do is watch documentaries in the sand, you little bitch. Like, fucking grow up and do some shit. What are you complaining about? You fucking little worm. Just go do something. They killed your father. Why are you not mad about this? They just tried to murder your mother 18 times. God damn it.
We love Paul. We love Paul so much in his generic-ass space name.
I think they'll win the war on the planet using worms to take out giant ships, which would be cool if they actually did it, you know?
Yeah.
So they'll use the worms. They'll take out, like, the big, bad military babies. And then they'll, like, get some ships, and they're like, we gotta go after the Imperium or whatever. And they'll fight some other wars. They'll probably have to fight a battle on Paul's original planet. We're gonna fight. Paul will be able to take out the big emperor guy, but I think that his sister, who will probably be grown up by this time in the war, might end up being the one to take control.
Oh.
So the prophecy might be about her ultimately, but he's still the one that's gonna have to do the stuff.
I could be into that. I really hope they put a big old worm on tube ship and just drop it on Emperor Planet. I think
that would
be cool.
So funny. But I also love the idea of, like, they just, like, sneak the worm onto the ship itself and it just eats all the bad guys. It's the movie Alien, but the ship is much bigger and it's just these fucking worms just absolutely inhaling people with their giant fucking thistles.
I'd watch that day one.
Yeah,
on
right.
HBO Max.
Pretty good.
So let's segue to another part of our podcast. We're going to talk about world building. What movies do it well? And what are some good ways to immerse your viewers in the world of your film? So, do you wanna mention one that you think it does a good job?
So let's fucking talk about Star Wars, because we already have.
Yeah.
Star Wars, which is, you know, like, the biggest thing of all time, sort of. So talking about the original trilogy, like, let's talk about how that movie begins. You get a, like, at least New Hope begins. You get a little... You get a little scroll of words, and they're like, hey, there's a war in space. Isn't that wild? These rebels are trying to not die. And you're like, that's cool. That's neat. And then we immediately begin. We have a ship chase. People get fucking massacred. There's a big scary guy. And then people get shot off into a desert, but we don't spend the whole movie in that desert, do we? No. The thing about the first Star Wars and also the first three movies is that you're jumping between all these planets. You're meeting all these people right away. There's so much love, not only between the cast, but also by the people who made it, and you can feel it, and you're captivated, and you're immediately there. You're like, I'm here, and I'm ready. And you have these insane planets and these desperate battles that feel, like, pitched, and there are stakes, and there are consequences, and you're like, interesting. Dune does not give us any of that, like, in comparison, because you don't really feel the threat, but Star Wars does a really good job of immediately getting you into it without sacrificing, like, the story.
Exactly. And there's weird space magic stuff in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But it doesn't...
But they use it.
Sideline the film? Like, I feel like in Dune, it would always slow down whatever was happening. In Star Wars, it doesn't. You even have, like, the whispers in the head, you know? And it's functional, and it works, and it's, you know, quick and easy. The one thing that I'm not... I don't know if I'm the biggest fan of... Is sure. the opening scrolls, you know?
I get that. I also feel like we probably could have been figured it out without it.
I have different thoughts about how you disseminate the information that you're trying to tell your viewers. I think always show, don't tell, right? The opening crawl is just literally we're reading what's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know about that. But I also don't like in Blade Runner... 2049. I hate so much how they're like, oh yeah, there's this thing happened called the blackout. It messed up our archives. The way that the dialogue is structured around including the idea of this worldwide blackout that destroyed information, they're just kind of casually throwing it around as if like we would, you know, today if that was like a real thing that happened in real life. But it doesn't help an audience understand what that is, or the gravity and the effect that event had. Also, that's such a cool thing that we just didn't get to see at all.
Yeah, so if I can talk about Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049, is that my main problem is the world building. All the cool things are built around Blade Runner. All the cool things are not in Blade Runner.
Yes.
The blackout that happens decades before the film Blade Runner 2049 is way more interesting. It's like a total chaotic moment. You had robots running around, you had subterfuge and spies and all this shit, and you're like, wow, that would have been a cool bit to watch. You don't get it. And the original Blade Runner, the one memorable thing about it is that speech at the very end talking about like attack ships on fire, and you're like, wow, that would have been cool to see. Probably cooler than a weird rapist cop be bad at his job for 2 hours.
That movie also starts with an opening crawl as well. Or text.
Yeah, because they're like, hey, there are robots and there are cops that hunt the robots.
Welcome to Cops. Movie. I mean... Alien, yeah. I think, is a really effective film in every sense of the word. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. But it also... doesn't think your audience, or its audience, is a bunch of babies who can't understand things. And it also just has a really good, like, the production design team on that film.
Oh, they killed it. She looks
insane.
It's insane.
Because you have the difference between, like, a wrecked alien ship, and then also, like, the really claustrophobic, cluttered, almost analog spaceship of the humans. It's just so cool. It's just so good, and you immediately you're like in the world.
A lot of the shit that is good about Alien, not only does everything look fucking cool, but also you really don't know that much, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Not that you shouldn't explain things, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that sometimes if it's good and you believe in it, the story will carry itself, even if you don't bog it down with explanations. Because with Alien... like, you have this little thing that jumps on a dude, and then it puts an alien in its chest, and it just comes out. And no one's like, oh, but why and where did it come from? They're just like, we have to fucking kill it, or we die. We gotta save the cat, or it dies.
You know, the characters, they're all miners, right, on this ship, or they're all crewmates.
Yeah, the Nostromo, yes.
Yeah. And there's an opening, like, kind of conversation with all of them once they get out of, like, cryosleep, where you kind of realize what their job is, and what they're doing in deep space, and they're talking about their wages. And it's a really natural way to give the audience the information that they need, like the context that they are craving for, like, why are these people out in space? What are they doing? Who are they? And they're just like, you know, blue collar space workers, you know, almost. Yeah. And that's the information that we need. And we don't necessarily need, like, there's an empire and space Jesus and worms.
Yeah, because, like, those are things that we can learn over yes. time. We don't yes. have to have shoved in our face as if we're idiots. Because, yeah, Dune just keep going, hey, there's a prophecy. Do you know about it? And I'm like, yeah, you told me 5 minutes ago. Well, we're going to tell you again. I'm like, you don't need to. So, yeah, about Alien. So there was one other good movie in uh-huh. the Alien franchise being Aliens. Aliens almost takes too long to get where the movie is because it does. At the beginning of the movie, like, Ripley, who's the only survivor of the alien incident, is trying to tell all these Marines about how, you know, there are still aliens on the planet that they decided to colonize on accident. Well, not an accident. It was like a
on purpose,
insidious evil corporate plot, whole thing. Blah. But there's all this time spent, like, she's like, well, these aliens are really bad. And I'm like, yeah, but you could have just opened with, like, the military showing up and everyone being dead and it would have been fine. But what Aliens does really well with world building is they, instead of just having this cramped ship, they have this huge, terrifying ghost colony full of all these dead people and, like, corpses and cocoons and monsters. And it's, like, super interesting because it has that claustrophobic feel, but it also is this whole new alien place full of aliens. Yeah. And also, you know, they built that giant scary alien queen puppet that still holds up. And you're like, God damn, that's terrifying.
That's terrifying. And also, why is everything so wet? Like, why?
Because it's creepy. You're like, right. I'll get pneumonia, but also die.
Can I talk about one other movie?
Yeah, you can talk about even more than one.
Oh,
if you want.
A little sidestep from the Alien franchise, but
okay.
WALL-E.
Yeah.
WALL-E does a really good job of explaining everything you need to know without over-explaining. And it's... And, like, there's times where people are just talking to the camera, right? Like, the informational videos. But it's in-world, and it's entertaining, and it never feels like you're being pulled out of it, because it's very, like, late-stage capitalism of, well, the planet's fucked, so we'll just leave instead of fixing it. Bye! The opening with all these towers of trash, right? And it's an empty city, and it's just WALL-E going around picking up stuff. That tells you everything you need to know for right now.
Yeah, and also about, like, what WALL-E is and why he does what he does.
Exactly. And then things change when WALL-E's world changes, and our perspective of the world is then shifted because of that change. It's a good movie.
So if we're talking about building incredibly complicated universes, not only in the sense of multiple characters, but literally planets and worlds and all kinds of nonsense, I want to talk about Mass Effect. not Andromeda. Let's not talk about that.
I don't want to do Andromeda today.
Mass Effect 1 through 3
yes.
Are incredible video games. And I admit that at the beginning, I do think there's a little bit of a, you got to read a smidge. I understand. I understand that sometimes that's a little much. But with Mass Effect, shit's really fucking complicated. Not in a bad way. But you really do need the smidge bit of a preface that, oh, humans discovered these things on Mars and then we were able to advance our technology and then we went over here and went over here. But the plot is not, like, trapped within that thing. Like,
yes.
With a Blade Runner. Because everything that happens afterward is insane in Mass Effect. And one of my favorite things about it, and something that I think is good in other mediums too, is that in Mass Effect, you really feel like you're in the middle of something.
Mm-hmm.
Shit has happened before. Like, you're charting your own course, but others have gone before you. People have won and fucked up, and you have to try to fix things and explore. And there's all this history around you, and it feels real, you know? Like, it feels like you are in the middle of a universe that people live in. And also, many, many, many people die in.
Most people, almost.
I think that's really good, and it's effective, and it's kind of good to make things feel worn. If that makes sense. Something yeah. that Star Wars is really good at, because obviously the Millennium Falcon is great, but it's also kind of a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the charm, because it's like, oh, here's a rugged spaceship. And even Alien, it's like, oh, this ship's kind of a piece of shit, but that's cool because that means we've been in space a while. It's a really effective way of being like, okay, this is what things are like.
Yes.
Mass Effect also really good at having really innovative and interesting locations, especially the Citadel, which for a long time is the coolest place to be until it's not. It's kind of the heart of galactic civilization, but also it's just like a place where people can hang out. There's a club where you can just kind of party, and there are stores you can go to. And yeah, you know, you have to talk to the ambassadors, and sometimes they betray and try to kill everyone. I mean, does it get invaded like 3 times in 5 years? Yeah. But other than those times, it's a lot of fun. It's a cool place to be. And there are planets in Mass Effect, you play Commander Shepard and you're fighting the Reapers, these giant, terrifying machines. But every battle that you fight on every planet feels different.
Yes.
Because the terrain is different, but also the plot is different. And the characters you interact with are different. And it feels like the universe is not only different depending on where you are, but depending on what you do. And I think that's important.
So, I mean, this isn't a space movie, per se. But it is a movie that has an incredible amount of world building. But Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or movies, excuse me. But so that, like, I know the whole joke is that the third Lord of the Rings, like, ends, like, 8 different times. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But you can feel the actions of each characters in each of those endings. Like, you feel like the conclusions of their stories is fulfilling because the world is affected by their action. You know, similar mm-hmm. to what you were talking about with Mass Effect. I just like Lord of the Rings. It also has a really good world. They do the Dune opening thing where they're like, we're going to narrate over some things that happen. And it's not the best way to introduce a movie.
Okay, but look, I think it's okay as long as the movie still happens.
You're right.
Because sometimes it doesn't. But I'm
You're
just
right.
I understand that it can be cheap and it's something that you should only do if you really have to do it. But I think with Lord of the Rings or Mass Effect, when the universe or world is so fucking big and absurd, that you need like a smidge bit of preface.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, you can't just go to Firework Festival. You'll be like, who are these people and what do they want?
We also see a lot of the world of Lord of the Rings through like
it's about exploration, yeah.
The 12 hours of movie there is. And so it helps to kind of have that little footnote. The characters like, this is Rohan. There's horses here and people are poor. And I'm like, okay, thanks, Gandalf.
We did it.
I can excuse the opening of Fellowship because the movie's good, you know? The rest of it is inoffensive, so like...
Yeah, I think that is mostly what matters. Something that I think Lord of the Rings does really well that I brought up with Mass Effect is that you are in the middle of shit. Lord of the Rings, you really feel like you are in the middle of a place that people have lived in and people have died in and sacrificed things for, even as the action is ongoing.
Yes.
So there's so much history there that it feels lived in, it feels worn, it feels good, it's effective.
Yes.
You didn't talk any about, not that you have to, but I'm willing to open this box, about Destiny 2.
Oh my god. Okay, I'll talk about Destiny 2.
Yeah,
let me talk about Destiny 2.
Yeah, I want you to have your time.
Or just Destiny in general. So, it's stupid. It's dumb and it's bad. The world building in this game is awful. In Destiny 1, you had to do things in-game to unlock story and lore bits, right? And then you would have to go online on your computer to actually view the lore? Trash. Terrible. And, like, if you didn't unlock these cards, there were just things that were just missing. Context-wise, you're like, why am I on Mars? It's like, no. So, yeah. In Destiny 2, they've made it a little bit better. But the story is still all over the place and just wildly inconsistent and nuts. But I'm here for it every single day. There's a giant, like, robot orb in the sky that gives us magic powers. And then everyone wants to take magic powers for themselves, like all these different aliens. And there's all this, like, space wars. It's very dumb. It's very confusing. But it's fun. And, like, I wouldn't think too hard about it or your brain shuts off.
I like that it's set. I like that Destiny 2 is set in our solar system. For better or worse, because I know sometimes it's silly, but it's cool because you're like, oh, I know of Titan. I know of Europa. You know what I mean? I know where Saturn is.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to see these places morph and be torn apart by all these wars between all these factions. And obviously there's Earth, but Earth is kind of fucking rock to shit. And then there's the moon. But it's kind of cool because these are familiar places getting, like, completely flipped around by all this wild stuff. And I think that's cool.
I think it is.
Because in Mass Effect, usually in Mass Effect, you're, like, pretty far away from Earth. Because you're jumping all over the place. But in Mass Effect 3, Earth gets invaded and absolutely demolished. And then you're like, oh, shit. And I always think it's cool. Even as far away in space as we get in all these different franchises and movies, I'm always like, but what about Earth? What's Earth doing? And I think it's really cool when people are able to put a spin, like a space kind of spin on Earth. But to make something cool in space and all these different worlds, there's a lot to consider. I think the settings matter. Obviously, the planets matter, the places you go matter, but I think plot and characters are what make it work. Like, no matter how far away from Earth you go, if you forget about humanity, if you forget about the people, then whatever you're doing is going to collapse, because who cares?
Yeah, that's fair.
There's only one Connecticut.
They're like, we're cops, but we hunt demons.
And the assistant walks through a giant portal
that he thought was art. The walls are shaking, mirrors are falling.
She sees the devil, and I think it might be her dad.
And I'm killing people, and there's a frog detective, and you're...
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Middle Watch, our famous segment where we watch an episode in the middle of a TV show without any context. We do it out of love, because there's so much television we can't watch it all, so we might as well watch a little bit of everything. Today, we watched Dark Matter, the hit sci-fi show, season 2, episode 11, Wish I'd Spaced You When I Had the Chance. That's the whole title. It's kind of long.
So, okay, it opens with some very macho people playing a macho game of
guess the napkin color or whatever.
It's like, guess the card that's under a bowl.
It's like, is it red or blue or white? One of the characters is kind of clairvoyant. It's not explained.
Yeah, and then the other character is, I think it's an old man in a young man's body, but he speaks like such a weirdo, and I hate it.
You mean the guy who had like that weird prophetic vision at the end for no reason?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's four. I'm sure he has a real name, but the show is like, no, we're going to do this bit. And I'm like, okay. Well,
so, 3 and 5. Oh, God, I fucking hate this show so much. Oh, my God, it hurts my bones.
Three is,
Three's Jacket Man.
No, I can do it. Wait, I wrote down his name. Come on, where is it?
Boone or something?
It is something stupid like that shit. Whatever, three. Three, who's basically Joel from The Last of Us, is just chilling with Five, who's surrogate daughter. They're running around like a farmer's market, and they're talking with their comrades playing the color square game, and they're like, hey, we should leave in 5 minutes, because you know they're being chased by the Galactic Authority. And they're like, nah, let's leave in 20 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, that decision can't go anywhere but a good place. And then three bumps into a weird looking hillbilly evil guy.
Space hillbilly. And
then space hillbilly. And then five gets kidnapped by a bunch of cannibal looking dudes. And that's not good.
Yeah. And then some guy comes up to Boone and is like, hey, did your friend get kidnapped? I just saw it. I can take you there.
Yeah. Random civilian who just betrays everyone. Yeah. Piece of shit.
He's a real eavesdropper, you know? Also, I want to tell you that there's this part where three is asking about where his friend went, right? And he asks these extras, he's like, do you know where she went? And they like open and close their mouths, and then they shake their head. And he goes, okay, well, thanks anyways. And then they mouth again, but they don't say anything. And that's because if you have an extra that talks, they have to be credited and they have to be paid. So they just were like, fucking move your mouth, don't say anything. Production value, $0. Five is at the hillbilly camp. And she stabs some guy in the ear with a spoon. Like, good for her. But they're talking about, like, selling her off to people, right?
1 second on that, because I wrote that shit down. They knock her out, and they're like, oh, well, we're going to send her to a scary place. And you're like, what the fuck? And then later, they're like, yeah, we're going to give her to the miners. And then we're going to give her to the harvesters. And then we're going to give her to the meat traders. And then I'm going to wear her skin like a jacket and put her face on the wall. And I'm like, this is such insane fucking dialogue. What the fuck?
You're right.
What the fuck?
You're right. I forgot about that. I purposely blocked it out of my mind because it was just too much.
And then after half an hour of rewiring a bear trap, which probably we didn't have to watch happen, but we still watched happen, three takes out a dude in the woods. And then bursts into the cabin and then kills three guys. We don't really see it. It's kind of a quick, not greatly edited sequence. And then he saves his surrogate daughter. And then there's like a knock at the door, or like he hears something. Even though the friendly civilian at the beginning of the episode said there are five brothers, after killing four of them, he's like, my guard is down. I feel calm. But then the door opens and he gets shot. by the fifth brother. He kills the fifth brother, but he's still got a bullet wound. It's kind of in a vague area, but bleeds a lot, but you don't really know where it is. It's kind of like one of those shoulder shots where you're like, is he dead, or what's going on?
It definitely should have hit a lung. It was pretty low, so...
Yeah, it was a very near-death injury, you know, but... And he spends most of the episode bleeding and complaining, as heroes do. As heroes do.
Sure.
The Galactic Authority are the big bad guys.
Yes, and they have a clone army.
They have a clone army that I don't hate. And Dark Matter, they're like, oh, well, we can basically be on a spaceship and then beam our brains into clones to do combat. So that way you can, you know, have a bunch of people, but there's no real risk because if the clone dies, the person is still alive. And I'm like, that's interesting because as a threat, it's almost infinite because mm-hmm. it's like, well, if they have the resources and the money, they can just keep throwing shit at you forever. And I think that is kind of scary. That's not really represented in this episode in which, you know, the biggest threat is really the hillbillies. And you only really see, I don't know, 8 people wearing kind of dog shit plastic spirit Halloween armor.
Mm-hmm.
But as a plot thing, I'll give them that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
The people playing the fun color square game realize that it's time for super secret silent lockdown, which isn't really silent because it's super obvious that it's happening. Knife girl, who is 2, there's a girl who has knives. That's her bit.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, I guess. They try to sneak past the Galactic Authority guards by wearing evil armor. Classic move. It doesn't work, and she just stabs a bunch of people, and then they leave. And then they just get out. You don't really see them escape, but then they just show up on the friendly ship later, and you're like, well, I guess it worked.
For budgetary reasons, but yeah. No, that's like, it's so goofy. So they, the cops are like hot on their trail, and 3 and 5 are like in the woods running away, but 3's like not having it, because he's been shot. But he's like trying to put on a tough face. He's like, we don't need to stop, unless you want to. And he kind of collapses, and he's like, yeah, I think I'm done. Like, I don't know if I can go on anymore, but you gotta get out of here, you know, friendo. You know, you gotta live your life. You gotta get out, and like, I'll hold them off or whatever. He tries to shoo away this person that actually very obviously cares about him by saying like, oh, you're just a brat. You know, you've always been like kind of a thorn in our side, and I should have spaced you when I got the chance, which I think...
The title...
means like shoot her out the airlock.
Oh yeah,
so pretty cool. That's a child,
not Old Yeller, but it's, you know, the dog bit where it's like, can't you see I don't love you anymore? And she doesn't fall for it at all. She's like, shut the fuck up.
She's like, I know what you're doing, you goofy guy.
But she does leave eventually because he's bleeding so much and he has his gun, and it's like, well, he'll try to do a last stand in the woods. Starts to snow and the bad guys are rolling in. Kierkegaard's
this like Sherlock Holmes ass.
Kierkegaard's the big bad guy. Kierkegaard's rolling up with a bunch of bad guys, and 3 is behind a rock, and they do a little firefight, and now they have very obviously pistols, earth pistols, but they add a little flare, a little red,
a little pew, pew, pew,
so that it looks like
laser,
the future gun. Also, there's a line in the show where Kierkegaard's like, bring them in alive. And then he suits up about 40 soldiers. I mean, not 40, because you see literally like 8 in the whole episode, giving them like super rifles and rocket launchers. And I'm like, that is not how you do it, Kierkegaard.
That's not what alive means, my guy.
3 runs out of bullets and also is bleeding too much to put bullets in the gun. Kierkegaard's like, I'm here now, and starts to interrogate him about this fucking white hole bomb, because apparently he was part of another crew and blew up a research station, or I think maybe he didn't. I'm getting the vibe that he was roped into something shitty and then bad stuff happened.
I think they were sold, like they were told to deliver something and it wasn't what they thought it was.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was some kind of like subterfuge betrayal thing, and he's not really a bad guy. And Kierkegaard's like, okay, I get it. And I know I told you that I would let your friends live if you told me the truth, but why don't they shoot the rocket at your friendship anyway? But don't worry, because 5, the kid, actually wired an explosive or whatever, and the van blows up. And the van explosion is so big that it knocks everyone down 8 miles away in the woods. So that's cool. That makes sense. Our friends land in the woods, and then they circle Kierkegaard and are like, stop with your shit. And they don't kill Kierkegaard because they're like, we want you to know what I told you. And I get the fucking sense that Kierkegaard is 100% going to roll up and be fighting the side of the angels in like,
oh, yeah,
either in 2 episodes, because this was episode 11 and 13 would be the end, or in season 3.
Yeah.
100% we'll get him on our side. Easy peasy, no problem. Is that it?
I think, let's see.
I mean, we didn't talk about the robot.
I don't care. I don't want to talk about the robot. Okay, we don't have to talk about the robot. There's someone that talks like Siri. That's all you need to know.
I want
to
talk about... Oh, can I talk about Six, though?
Go for it. They're nuts.
Psychotic, insane shit that happens with Six. So Six is a guy we meet. He's in the ship. He's kind of running point for everyone on the ground. And you're like, that's fine. But then later in the episode, he's talking to Nyx, who is clairvoyant sometimes. And they're talking about the state of the galaxy. Because apparently, and something that... The reason that Kurkin was trying to hunt down Three is because apparently they're on the verge of a giant corporate war. You get the feeling that this is kind of an alien situation where you have mega corporations in space that have huge amounts of power.
Yeah.
And also the government in the galaxy is shitty because it's the Galactic Authority and it seems super evil. So you have all these unstable players, you have a corporate war about to break out, people are trying to maintain order. And Six is like, well, you know, maybe we're on the verge of something better, and Nyx is like, well, everything always resets and is the same. And then Six is like, well, we have the blink drive, we can make a difference, and you don't know what the blink drive is, it sounds scary, And then Six just keeps on talking, and it gets a little upsetting. At first I'm like, okay, but then it's like, uh-oh.
He's like, we can enforce the laws, and go around, and like... If people are acting out of line, we'll take them out. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, he's like, well, we could let the corporations fight, and then we could kill whoever wins the war. And I'm like, okay.
Bold.
This is season 2. The war hasn't even happened yet that you already think you can win and then become the governors of the solar system afterward. It's a lot. Like, it almost feels like it comes from a good place, but also you can see him joining the bad guys in a few episodes, and it would not be a huge surprise.
Yeah. He's also already betrayed the group at least once, according to the dialogue.
According to the robot lady, yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, a mess. They wanted to do so much, but they had so little money to do it. And I get that struggle, because that's me in real life, you know?
Okay, yeah, but that's only part of it, because it's about the pacing and the shit that happens, because nothing happens at all in this episode. I mean, it does. I mean, sure, yeah, there's a little knife fight. You know, sure, there's like technically a cabin full of super cannibals.
Yeah.
What's weird about the cabin, though, is that you set up this claustrophobic space in the middle of the space woods. And you're like, you could have a really kind of cool bare knuckle brawl slasher fight that could actually be kind of interesting and maybe showcase that Three is supposed to be kind of a badass. And maybe he still gets winged. That's fine. But you have an opportunity to do like a kind of cool fight because you're in this new area. And you also have the farmer's market, which also sets up like a kind of cool... You can do some chase sequences. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have these settings that are kind of interesting. Like the first shot of the episode shows the farmer's market in the center of this huge valley in these woods. And you're like, okay, this is interesting. But they don't use these settings in a way that matters. Like, I think this episode could have been set fucking anywhere and it would have been like the same episode and it wouldn't have mattered.
Oh, for sure.
And that's not ideal, I think, when it comes to using your setting effectively in a story.
And let me tell you too, if this was just like a group of people that had like an RV that were driving around and doing crimes,
it would have been the same.
It would have been the exact same episode.
And that's not good. That's not ideal.
No, especially if it's like set in space.
You don't necessarily have to travel to 8,000 planets to make a space movie or space TV show or space game work, but you do kind of need a sense of wonder and excitement, you know, and a battle or...
And things to be different, you know, than just like correct. Toronto. It's a Canadian show.
Yeah, it really didn't feel very alien or interesting or vibrant or alive. Also, the blankets. Can we talk about the blankets? How uncomfortable they looked?
They looked like they were just sequins.
It was so weird. It looked like fucking fiberglass asbestos nightmares that these people were sleeping in. I guess they were trying to be like, ooh, space blanket. But like,
but also looked cold as hell. What the fuck? Like, it did not look like it would retain any heat.
The ship was so uncomfortable. We saw this ship for 2 seconds. I'm not going to talk about this for long. But it really did look like a pile of shit. Can't imagine people being on this ship at all. I know it's probably supposed to be a weird ghost of monster ship that people woke up on and didn't love. But, like, where are the homie touches? Where are the little things on the wall? Where's, like, the blood splatter or the bullet holes? Give me something.
Yeah.
Give me some character to the ship.
Have the interior of the ship tell a story if the characters aren't going to.
Especially if the ship is, like, such a big point in the show. Because obviously, like, the Serenity, you're like, people live on this.
Oh, yeah.
Part of it's because the ship is, like, a pile of shit. But, like, the Falcon, sometimes that's good. Sometimes that makes it work. The Normandy is very lived on because it's fucking gigantic, but also because all these people have these little spaces that they've carved out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've made a home on this warship that is the one thing standing between life and death of the universe. The little touches mean so much. Even if you're in a space consumed by war, you can't forget, like, the little things.
Yeah, the personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want to love... You have no idea how much I want to love ragtag space weirdos.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's, like, one of my favorite things of all time.
It's your brand.
Mass Effect, Star Wars, what have you. It's the thing I love. I wanna be down with it. Dark Matter doesn't quite have that magic. Maybe somebody in the comments is going to hit me with that Dark Matter Thanksgiving episode, though, will change your life. And I'm like, no, sure, maybe it will.
I would watch, like, that episode if it
I
existed.
Would watch that episode, too.
Do you hear that on the wire? Oh, my gosh.
You're going to watch a city block get blown up by a jet.
There's a dog. There's a cool purple outfit.
And if you put it on, the world ends.
It doesn't make sense. Because
it's weird and in space, but on Earth, I don't know.
Who would have thought? Not me.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Newstown, the part of the show where we tell you shit that you already know. So, N7 Day happened recently. Yeah, I'm back at it, baby. I'm back at the Mass Effect. Mass Effect 4, we've known about Mass Effect 4 since December, but a new poster dropped, and it's like, Mass Effect will continue, and you're like, that's good, because that that's kind of like, okay, we're gonna continue the line of games that people liked, and Andromeda will probably be either dusted or quietly forgotten.
Yes.
In the poster, there's a giant crater. It looks like some kind of weird alien ball meteor weapon thingy. I don't know what it is.
Spooky.
There's a big ship parked by it. It's a new ship. It's not the Normandy, which... maybe survive, depending on how well you played the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blue lady, which we're pretty sure is Liara. There's a Krogan, which could be Rex. It looks like there might be a Turian, which could be Garrus. These are all characters from the game. There's a dead Geth, just kind of laying in the ground near the meteor.
Legion? No, he's already dead.
He died real hard.
Yeah.
It is unclear how much into the future we are from the original games. There's not been much word on that. We don't really know any story details. It's going to be hard to match the threat of the Reapers, which I think might be one of the best video game antagonists of all time, because that was built really well in all three games. So we don't know if it's going to be like, are we going to revisit them? Is it going to be a whole new threat? And I don't know if I like want it to be Shepard or want it to be someone else, because it's like, I love nostalgia. I want to explore things further, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind having a fresh start in a universe that I already love. So, you know.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm excited about it.
Also, I think it'd be cool if you could pick your species of alien.
I would be a human, but that would be neat.
That would be neat.
You could be a quarry and just never see anything.
I want to be a Hanar and go like, this one is happy to be a squid thing. You know?
Speaking of space, Guardians of the Galaxy 3 started filming on November 8th, which was just a few days ago. So we're looking at a release target of roughly May 23rd, 2023. So that'll be fun. Keep your eyes open. I think the Christmas special will come first.
Probably.
Though. But still, that's exciting. That's fun.
Yeah.
It's a movie that almost didn't happen, but now is happening. So, huzzah.
Oh, two pieces of news from
cool.
your okay. little boy, Trevor. Forza Horizon 5 was just released like 2 days ago, and it's really good. I played like maybe like an hour of it so far, just, you know, on day one, kind of just popped in. It's really fun. It's nice to be back. So it's a racing game, and the whole kind of premise is there's a big old festival. It takes over this whole kind of section of a continent or a section of a country, and you just drive super expensive cars real fast, and you crash them sometimes because you're not that good at the game. But it's still very fun. It takes place in Mexico, and there's like dust storms that make everything look Mad Max. So pretty cool. Pretty cool.
That does sound pretty rad.
And then the DLC for Animal Crossing just came out, and I haven't played it yet, but reviews are that it's fun. If you're looking to dust off your island, go nuts. There's a new DLC. I think it's available for $24. A whole new experience for you to do. So, if you're looking for more longevity in that game, there you have it. The nightmare that just never ends.
Keep your fingers crossed.
If that orange juice was just a mega lawsuit.
Good old Cyberpunk 2077.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, there's a lot of room to
grow. A lot of room to grow, you know? I hate to say that I'm right. Just kidding. I love it. I'm right, baby. Cyberpunk 2077 has the updates for the next generation have been pushed to 2022. We should have all seen it coming. Should not be a surprise. And if you're still waiting to play the game on next-gen consoles, this might be the best news for you. Even though it might not be what you want to hear right now, it might result in a better product down the line. Back in January of this year, they CDPR, the developers of Cyberpunk 2077, released a roadmap highlighting where things were going to be there, and that the next generation updates would come by the end of this year. And 2 weeks ago, they issued a new roadmap with an updated date, throwing the next gen update in quarter one of 2022.
How are we feeling about that? We think we're gonna get. You think it's gonna be more than that?
I'm thinking a little bit more than that. It's just it's just so suspicious. We haven't heard anything. But also, even if you do get that update in quarter one, it might not be great. It might be a broken mess again. Then there's a Witcher update, Witcher 3 next gen update coming in quarter two. And I would be not surprised if that just comes out quarter three or quarter four, mm-hmm. or just doesn't ever come out. I want it to, because I think that game is fantastic, but they're in a rough patch right now, and I don't know how much more they can take. Good luck to all of them. The game has almost come out a year ago. It's December 10th was when the game initially released. So. Is it playable? I guess so. Is it the quality that they promised? Absolutely not. So
wait, what are you talking about? I just hopped in the multiplayer lobby where I could see my character in third person as promised. I had a great time.
Oh yeah, sorry, that was me. I just haven't been online yet, you know? No. Shane's joking, yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing a bit.
He's doing a long goofy bit. So, this continues to be a kind of a big mess forever. And I don't know if I'm going to continue to do these updates because...
Is this the end? This is the finale?
This might be the finale.
This might be the finale, guys.
The season finale. Season finale. Until there's more, like, regular news. But this was kind of the big one that we were all kind of waiting for. If you're enjoying the game, good for you. If you have not enjoyed the game, well...
You're right.
You're right! Yeah. Yeah, so that is the update for this week.
All
right. In Bad Future City. Anyways, Shane, Dirty 30. If someone wants to tweet us about worms or Instagram us about spice, where should they do that?
Well, we are at Out of Dodge Pod on Instagram and Twitter. So if you want to come say hey, or if you have a suggestion about Middle Watch, maybe there's a show that you love or absolutely hate and you'd love to get our opinions on. By all means, send us a recommendation or send us a hello. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a little review, a little rating. It helps us get noticed, and we like knowing that we're alive and that we're reaching anyone at all.
Which we are. Shout out to you. Number two city, Detroit, baby.
Love you all around the world. Very much appreciate it. Hope you have a good day. Be safe, etc. Have you been seeing these snail memes? You familiar with the snail
meme? I am familiar with the snail meme.
What would you do? How do you escape the snail?
Well, what I would do is I would pay someone to put it in a box.
Just a box?
Not like a safe, you know?
Okay.
And then like do that thing where they spin it closed and it goes whoa, 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 and it locks.
Uh-huh.
And then, since I am now like a billionaire or whatever, right?
You have like, it's like 10 million. It's a lot of money.
I just say, hey, Mr. NASA, do you mind throwing this up there and then just do experiments on it forever? Or I just say, hey, you know how we send out those probes that have like that weird CD track with a bunch of sounds, Voyager, and stuff?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
Put it in there and send it to deep space. because
that's, you know what, that's a good idea. A lot of people trying to escape the snail are always like, I would just go to space, and I'm like, buddy, no, fuck that. Earth is our planet. Send that snail packing. Get that motherfucker off
kick
our
him
planet
to the moon.
No, the moon's too close. The moon's too close. People could land on the moon. It could hitch a ride. Dangerous. You got to send that boy into far space.
Do I have snail radar where I know, like, within, like, the continent that I'm on?
I would say yes. Okay. I think you definitely have a feeling of where the snail is, and that if it's, like, within the neighborhood, you would know.
Yeah.
I think you, like, there has to be a spidey sense, because just the immortal connection between you and the snail has to have some kind of, like, signature.
That, or I was thinking Mariana Trench, but I think that's too close to home.
It could float back up. It could catch a ride on one of those spooky nuclear submarines. We don't know where they are.
We really don't. We lost them.
I might try to try to trick the snail into some kind of perpetual motion machine, or using the energy that it creates by trying to murder me, get it to become a power source, thus offering clean, free energy to the globe at the price of its anger. You know, just trying to make a solution out of this rage. Yeah. Much like the anger beam that we talked about in a bit that didn't make it on the podcast.
On this, and on this. And welcome to our video.
We had a reptile.
Wait, wouldn't have been alive.